Canto 22. Our guiding angel who had led us here to the sixth circle we had left behind. One of my scars he'd made to disappear from my face, and as a matter for the mind, he had declared to us that those who thirst sufficiently for righteousness are blessed. His message terminating with the first word of the verse pronounced without the rest, just, sitiunt, they thirst. And I went on lighter than in the other stairwells. I followed the swift souls up where they had gone without much work. I hardly had to try. And Virgil said, love, lit by one virtue, always ignites another, though its flame appear only without. And thus it's true that from the moment Juvenal in fame came down to Limbo and made known to me your fondness, Statius, my own goodwill towards you had a reciprocity as great as ever possibly could fill the heart of one for one unknown. So now these stairs to me will seem short, but pray tell, and as a friend forgive my nerve for how I wax familiar, just how it befell your breast was occupied with avarice, as well as all the wisdom your seal brought. In the beginning Statius smiled at this, and then replied, in truth one would have thought, though your each word makes my heart more content as token of your love, things sometimes seem to give false matter for bewilderment, because their cause is hidden. Thus I deem your question to me makes plain your belief that I was grasping in the other life, doubtless because that sad flaw was the chief mark of my circle here. Yes, it was rife. No, then, my vice was just the opposite. I was a prodigal, and this excess thousands of moons have punished. Done with it, I can say now that I first found redress for my bad habits when I read those lines where you, deploring human nature, cried, thrice cursed gold hunger, to what dark designs do you not drive men to be satisfied? Had I not read that, I'd be rolling weights and jousting dismally. I learned our hands can spread like wings, and spending dissipates, and I repented, as of the demands of other sins. Many will rise again with cropped hair, who have lost through ignorance their due repentance. They shall live as men, their last hour playing games with their last chance. Know, too, that each sin's counter-sin is here. Keeping the vigil with its opposite, consumed by its own juice, though I appear to be among the avaricious, it is not for that I weep like them. I fear it's for the contrary that I grieve so. Now when you sing, the poet said who wrote the Bucolics, about Jocasta's woe, caused by two warring sons, there's not a note lent to you there by history's muse Clio, that indicates the one faith was yet yours, without which mere good deeds are not enough. If that be so, what brought you to the shores of light? What sacred sun or earthly stuff that makes a candle, so that you could raise your sails and steer behind the fishermen? And the other. It was you that turned my gaze toward Parnassus, so that I began to drink in its cool caves. Yes, it was you, first after God, that set my mind alight. You were the guide whose lamp shows the way through to those behind him as he goes by night. Not for himself, but to make others wise, he shines. The age, you said, turns new again. Justice returns, the first days take fresh guise, and out of heaven a new race of men descends. A poet and a Christian, I, because of you. But to be clear just how, I'll set my hand to stir a deeper dye and color in my outline for you now. The waiting world was pregnant everywhere with the true faith, sown by the messengers from the eternal realm. Your words were there, the ones I spoke, and so in tune with theirs I formed the habit of frequenting these new preachers. In my eyes they came to seem so holy that Domitian's cruelties against them saw me trying to redeem their tears with mine. While I was there beyond, I helped them. Their straight ways made me deplore all other sects. So moved, I pledged my bond. I'd been baptized in secret well before I brought the Greeks to threaten in my lines the Theban rivers. But for fear, I hid, a closet Christian making pagan signs, and this lukewarmness about what I did earned me 400 long years without cease of touring the fourth circle. Tell me, then, you that first raised the curtain to release my vision of the good of those four men I named, Caecilius and Varius, Terence and Plautus, are they damned to hell? If so, in which part? This we must discuss while we ascend this hill. Those four, as well as Perseus and I, my leader said, are with the Greek most favored by the milk of the Muses. In the first ring of the dead blind prison were the elders of our ilk, the ones that raised us proudly we invoke, them and their singing mountain. In that place with us, and I can't name them at a stroke, there are too many, you can see the face of Antiphon, and know Euripides, Simoniades and Agathon, each Greek whose brow wore laurels once. To please you more, I'll mention those of whom you speak. Ismene and Antigone, Thetis. The list was long, but finally the two poets were silent. Well content with this exchange, from having talked as poets do, they took the chance to look around them, freed from climbing and the walls. The hours that drew the sun, one handmaid always in the lead each hour, were four down, and the fifth was in the harness, burning horn upright. I think, my leader said, the best way to begin is with our right side outward to the brink, and then bear left, as usual, round the wall. Just so our habit served there as a rule, and off we went with scarce a doubt at all, because that soul from the elected school agreed with us. Those two walked on ahead, talking of poetry and how it's made. I walked behind and drank in what they said, but soon their pleasant talk about our trade was interrupted by a tree that stood square in the way, and it was full of fruit. And all the fruit smelled sweet as it looked good. And as a fir scanned upward from the root, tapers from branch to branch toward the tip, so this tree tapered downward so that none, I think, should climb it. Some high lip of the cliff that walled our pathway spilled and spun a fall of clearest water, which dispersed among the leaves above. The two approached the tree, and from among its boughs there burst a warning voice, as if they had encroached, "You may not eat this food!" Then it went on. Mary dwelt more upon the marriage feast, its honor and completeness, than upon her own mouth, which up here has never ceased to intercede for you. In times long gone, a thirsty Roman woman was content with water. Nor did Daniel eat his fill, but spurned the king's feast always, and this meant he gained in wisdom by his frugal will. As beautiful as gold was the first age. Hunger made acorns tasty, thirst made sweet nectar of every brook, so you can gauge how satisfied the Baptist was to eat the locust and sip honey. Every page about this in the gospel shows, therefore, his greatness and his glory. Less is more.